It always amazes me to be thinking and praying about what I want to preach or need to preach. And sometimes 2 or 3 weeks in advance, and sometimes not till Saturday. The Lord will give me a little idea, and then it'll keep growing and growing, and lay there in bed at night and take away and add to. I go lay down, you know, pretty early, and Pam will be up doing things, and she'll come in there and say, "Are you still awake? Are you sermonizing?" I said, "Yeah." And that which I have to share this morning, I hope it will come across as thought-provoking, challenging, encouraging, and not condemning. And I'm going to try my best to put it in that kind of language. Now, you know, this is the time of year. The church folks all over America getting their pulpits, getting their Sunday school classes, getting our little groups, and start bemoaning and groaning and complaining. The politically correct police have taken Christ out of Christmas. You know, they talk about happy holidays and season's greetings instead of Merry Christmas. And we moan and we groan. I remember when we were living in Oklahoma and the city of Tulsa decided that they no longer would have a Christmas parade, they'd have a holiday parade. And a lot of folks got up in arms. They went to the parade committee, but they couldn't get it changed. They went to the city council, they couldn't get it changed. So Tulsa's, you know, I don't know whether it's as big as Charlotte, but, you know, it's a big city. So those folks that didn't like it, they just went over another part of town, had their own parade. And for several years, you know, they had their own Christmas, you know, the main sponsored parade was the holiday parade, but they had a Christmas parade that was as big as the holiday parade, just in a different part of town. And I don't know whether they still do that or not, because, you know, the folks kept saying, y'all need to come back and just go with the flow. But we do moan and groan. And with that in mind, I want to say something to you. You're the one, and I'm the one, that's responsible for how much Jesus is in your Christmas. The politically correct police can't control how much Jesus is in your Christmas. Now, I'm going to do, in order to prove that to you, I'm going to do the thing that you dreaded and hated in school. I'm going to give you a pop test. Now, notice I haven't handed out any paper and any pencils, but I'm going to ask you 10 questions, and you answer them as honestly as you can, and you and Jesus grade them. And the question is, how much Jesus is in your Christmas? Because nobody can put or take Jesus out of your Christmas but you or me. First question is, how much Jesus is in your talk? Other people may say season's greetings, happy holidays, or whatever, but you can say Merry Christmas. You can say back to that clerk that says happy holidays, Jesus bless you this Christmas season. You can use the word Jesus and there's not a thing they can do about it. You can talk about Christ all you want to. I'm not. You can put Jesus in your talk whether they do or not. You can be a witness with the way you talk. So that's the first question. Second question is this. How much Jesus is in what you wear? Now there's absolutely nothing wrong with wearing a sweater with big old Santa Claus on it. Please don't take what I'm saying that way. I think my wife's got several with Santa Claus and Christmas trees. You know, that's no problem. But you know, do we have anything in our wardrobe that says Jesus is the reason for the season or a manger scene? I didn't look at the article. There's a little blurb on my computer yesterday that said some airline was apologizing to some lady for making her change her T-shirt or sweater or whatever because it said something about hail, H-A-I-L, or praise Satan. And then they apologized for making her change that. You ever look at what people are wearing in Walmart? All kind of vulgar, obnoxious, ugly, antichrist slogans and pictures. You know, wouldn't it be a whole lot better if they walked around and saw manger scenes or Jesus or something or other? Like I said, there's nothing wrong with the Christmas trees and Santa Claus, but it'd be nice if one or two things we had that we wore had Jesus in them. Think about it. How much Jesus is in what we wear? We could make a difference. Just a witness. Now, let me back up. You remember a week or two ago I preached about people that wore those what would Jesus do bracelets and then acted like knuckleheads? Don't put on your Jesus sweater and go act like a knucklehead. You know, wear something else that time you go to Walmart. Third question is this. How much Jesus is in what you mail? Now, every one of us have unsaved friends, unsaved family, backslidden friends and backslidden family. When we mail them a Christmas card, do we mail them a card with a big fat Santa trying to get down the chimney? Or do we mail them a card that's got a manger scene or a wise man following a star or whatever? You know, you can be a subtle witness to those lost family and friends just with a Christmas card that you mail them. You know, they know you're a Christian. They sort of halfway expect it. And they may be disappointed when we don't witness to them in a simple, simple little way. Okay, the next one. How much Jesus is in what you watch? There's all kinds of TV programs and movies about Christmas. And I know there's some old favorites that some of you have been watching 50 years, and they're good. No problem with it. But do at least some of the things that you watch have a Christian theme? Especially if you're watching them with your kids and your grandkids. Do they have a Christian theme? Next question is this. How much Jesus is in what you hear? And I think one of my favorite non-Christian songs is I'll Be Home for Christmas, If Only in My Dreams. White Christmas, I think, is one of the most popular. There's nothing wrong with those. Enjoy them. But how much Christmas will you hear? How much Jesus in the music that you hear? Especially If you're the kind of person that entertains and has music playing softly in the background, if you've got non-Christian people there or backslidden folks there when you're entertaining, will at least some of the music point them to Jesus? You see, you choose how much Jesus is in what you hear. How much Jesus is in what you buy. Now, I know a ring's a ring's a ring. A pair of gloves is a pair of gloves. But when you start buying books, music, toys, video games, what about those? You know, as a pastor who's always done visiting, it just makes me so sad to walk into a home that should be a Christian witness and see kids sitting there reading Satan-honoring books, playing with Satan-honoring toys, playing Satan-honoring video games. And mom and daddy or grandma and grandpa bought them because that 8-year-old kid didn't go buy them, or that 6-year-old kid didn't go buy them. We choose. We choose how much Jesus in what we spend, what we buy. Getting quiet in here. How much Jesus is in what you display? You know, if by some feat of accomplishment we could go over to Africa or India or some other place and pick up a native that had never heard of Jesus and bring them in the door of your home, are there things in your home that would cause them to say, "What's this all about?" And you could tell them about Jesus? Or is there anything in there that would be a negative witness? How much Jesus is in the way we decorate? It really wasn't a Christmas, this isn't really a Christmas story, but I heard of, when I was in Tulsa, I heard about a lady that went to a wedding. And she was an American, lived in America all of her life. When she walked out, she asked somebody, said, "Why did that church have that big T up there?" You know? They had a big T somewhere. She had no clue. But the person she was with had an opportunity to use that to talk to her about the cross and Jesus dying on that cross for her sin. Our decoration. We can have all kinds of things, but does some of our decoration point people to Jesus? All right, what about your kids, your grandkids, when they get done with Christmas? Will they think it's all about Santa or all about Jesus? We can read them stories of Frosty the Snowman, and that's good. And the night before Christmas. But what about Luke 2 and Matthew? Do we read them those stories and explain them? How much Jesus is in the way we teach Christmas to our kids and grandkids? Number 9. How much Jesus is there in your activities? This is sticky. But does Christmas become a reason to skip church or to go to church? When Pam and I were first married, it seemed like everybody in our families wanted to have stuff at the wrong time. And we said, okay, you can have it, but we're not coming. We're going to the Lord's house. And after they had it a time or two and we didn't show, they saw we were serious, they changed the time or the day. Does Christmas become a time to honor Jesus by being in his house, or an excuse? Number 10. In the middle of January, when you look at your bank statement, your credit card statement, and you look at all the money that you spent, how much of it will honor Jesus and be on missions? Will you have spent hundreds and maybe thousands on other things and then maybe nothing or very little on spreading the gospel of the one who's the reason for the season? I'm thinking about a couple that I know. And I guarantee you, when their grandkids get to their house, there's going to be plenty under the tree for them. I guarantee it. I know the way they treat their grandkids. But I know that they'll give generously to the Lottie Moon Christmas offering. Because even though their church is much bigger than Barbie's Grove, if we gave per capita like they give, that church gives, we'd be giving $5,000 or $6,000 at least instead of $1,500. Because they give generously. As a couple, they've probably done at least 100 Samaritan's Purse shoeboxes. Now the church did hundreds and hundreds and hundreds. But just as the husband and wife, they probably did at least 100. What's that, $1,000? $1,500? And then they go beyond that. Several, it doesn't happen every year, but several years, Pamela and I have got a little card from them and open it up, and it says something like, an orphan in Guatemala or Honduras or Nicaragua has been sponsored for a year in your honor and in your name. Or a goat has been given to a poor family in some place in India or Africa. Now, I'm not sure how honoring it was somebody give somebody a goat in my name. But you see, what they're doing is they're finding Christian ways to be generous and share Jesus. It doesn't always all have to be the Lottie Moon Christmas offering. It ought to be a big part of it. But folks, if we get done and we spent many, many dollars on everything else and very little on spreading the gospel of the Lord Jesus Christ, we've missed and we've not put Jesus in our Christmas. Now see, that's 10 questions. And they're hard questions. And I, you know, each one of us has to answer them for ourselves and for our family. And I'm not trying to be, I'm trying to encourage you to see that nobody can take Jesus out of your Christmas but you. Nobody can take Jesus out of my Christmas but me. I can put as much Jesus in my Christmas as I want. just by the actions I take and the things I do. Turn with me now in the gospel to the book of Matthew, chapter 5. Matthew chapter 5. Jesus preaching in the Sermon on the Mount. Verse 13. Ye are the salt of the earth, but if the salt have lost its savor, wherewith shall it be salted? It is thenceforth good for nothing, but to be cast out and to be trodden under foot of men. Ye are the light of the world. A city that is set on the hill cannot be hid. Neither do men light a candle and put it under a bushel, but on a candlestick, and it giveth light unto all that are in the house. Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father which is in heaven. Now notice the verb there. Ye are. Not ye ought to be. You could be, you might be, you should have been, but he said, you are. We are all the salt and we're all the light that the world's going to see. If it doesn't come from us as Christians, there's no other place for it to come. Now, you can be two grains of salt or a whole salt shaker full. You can be a 15-watt bulb or a great big spotlight. I was thinking about this when I was lying in bed last night. I got to remembering, you know, us old folks remember back when night you could be outside and you see big light round and around from the airport. They had the big light, and it shined all around the airport so that a pilot would know, oh, here's a place to land, and it's safe. Now, we can be 15-watt bulbs, or we can be beacons of light to tell people here is a safe place in Jesus where you can land for all of eternity. But it's our choice. You think about this. The only reason for God to leave us here after we're saved is to be witnesses. If not, we just walk the aisle, say, preacher, I accept Jesus. Zoop, straight to heaven. No. He leaves us here to be witnesses. He leaves us here to be salt and light to a world that's dark and going to hell. And if we don't do it, it's not going to get done. You are. And he says, be salt, be light, so that you might bring glory to our Heavenly Father. That as we are salt and light, we make a difference. We make a difference. There's a story that I've been hearing for 50 years. You've probably heard other preachers tell it. Or maybe you've seen it in the Sunday School Quarterly or some devotional magazine. But it goes like this. Back in the old days, before all of the technology that we now have, there was a man that was hired at night, he would be at a dangerous intersection in his town with a lantern. And when a train was coming, he would be swinging the lantern to let everybody know that the train was coming, to warn them. Well, one night there was a tremendous crash, a wreck. And so they had a court case to decide who was at fault. And so they got the old boy on the stand and they said, sir, were you swinging your lantern down at the crossing the night of that crash? Yes, sir, I was swinging my lantern down at the crossing. Okay? Somebody else is guilty. As he was walking away from the courthouse that day, he said to somebody that's with him, "Phew, I sure am glad they didn't ask me if the lantern was lit." It didn't matter how much he swung the lantern, if there's no light in it, it's worthless. We have a chance to shine and show our lantern in a dark world. Let's not be guilty as Christians this Christmas of swinging an unlit lantern. Let's, by all of the ways that we can, be light and be salt, so that somebody next Christmas will say, "Last Christmas, a member of Barbie's Grove showed me by what they said, by what they did, by how they lived, how much I needed Jesus. And I am so grateful for the salvation I now enjoy because they swung a lantern that had light." As we sing the invitation hymn, if you need to receive Christ, if you need to make some other decision, most of this, I mean, you know, we can come to the altar and make decisions, but most of what I've talked about will make the difference when we go home.